You swear it'll be different this time. You'll stay calm when your mom criticizes you, when your partner walks away mid-argument, when your friend ghosts you for the third time, and yet there you are again, defending, withdrawing, or apologizing just to make the tension stop. You're not weak, you're wired. Your brain learned long ago what to do when it sensed danger, and it still thinks those same moves are saving your life. Today, we're going to talk about what's really driving your emotional reactions, why change feels so impossible at first, and the five-step process to finally rewire those old patterns for good. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Relationships Made Easy podcast, where I give you the exact steps to create connection, joy, and ease in all your relationships, whether it's with your partner, your family, your friends, or most importantly, yourself. I'm Dr. Abby Metcalf, psychologist, best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and the bossy Jewish mom you didn't know you needed. Each week, you'll get no-nonsense, research-backed strategies served with humor and love, so you can stop second-guessing yourself and start having the relationships you deserve. You'll always leave knowing exactly what to say and do to shift your relationships for the better. So let's get to it. Welcome back to the Relationships Made Easy podcast. You know I'm your host, Dr. Abby Metcalf. Happy to have you here. Woo! This topic has come up a lot in my online community, the One Love Collective on Substack. If you don't know about it yet, I'll talk about it at the end. But it's something that keeps coming up. And when that happens, if it comes up a lot with my clients or my community, or if I'm getting a lot of questions, I know that that is a topic I should be covering. So let's get into, I guess first I want to talk about what emotional patterns kind of really are. And emotional patterns are automatic responses, or what really are neural shortcuts your brain built to help you feel safe. They're the kind of the grooves in a well-worn record that play the same song every time something, you know, familiar happens. So, and I'm realizing that most of you listening don't even know what a record is, maybe. Yeah, I used to have 45, so that's how old I am. Anyway, so regardless if you know what a record is or not, this is what kind of what's going on. It's like these well-worn grooves in your brain. And that creates, you know, really habits of thought, physical habits, emotional habits, all of it. So when you were young, your brain learned which sort of emotional strategies worked to get, you know, to get love, to avoid pain. So maybe, you know, if yelling shut people down, there's a lot of people use their anger to shut people up. So maybe you're someone who learned that if yelling, you know, when you yell, people would shut down. So maybe you learned that anger equals control. I think most people who have angry responses as a first reaction, that's what they learned. If silence kept the peace, maybe you learned that disappearing equal safety, right? So it depends on what kind of family you grew up in, how, and again, you react differently likely than some of your siblings. I used to say a lot like, wow, it's amazing that I grew up in the same house as my siblings and we're all so different. But I heard, I think it's Gabor Mate say, I apologize, but no siblings grow up in the same house really, because birth order, gender, there's so many, you know, where the family is socioeconomically by the time you come in, all the things, there's so many variables that really you're not growing up in the same family. You know, the temperament you're born with, there's so much. So if you're listening and even thinking, wow, you know, I get so emotionally reactive, but I have a sibling who doesn't, I don't understand. There's a lot to be said for all of the variables that go into making up a family. But okay. So, you know, I'm going to talk science a little bit. So the amygdala, again, that part of your brain that constantly scans for threat. I talk about your amygdala a ton on here. When it senses danger, even emotional danger, and you have to remember that what your childhood self thought was emotional danger is very different than what your maybe adult self thinks is emotional danger intellectually, But that doesn't matter. These things are, again, like part of your brain neural circuitry. So it's hard to undo. And so when your brain, that amygdala, senses danger, again, even emotional danger, it activates your stress response. So it floods your body with hormones, the stress-inducing hormones, you know, adrenaline and cortisol. And in that moment, your prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain responsible for logic, for your impulse control, for empathy, it goes offline. And that's why it's so hard to remember the great tool Abby taught you when you really need it. That's why you're facepalming later, going, oh, why did I say that? Or why didn't I remember to do X or Y? You're not, again, you know, you're not broken. It's just this is the hard wiring. But that's not even all the hard wiring, okay? So the amygdala shoots off, then the, you know, prefrontal cortex shuts down. But there's kind of a sneaky third step that happens, because once your amygdala fires and your prefrontal cortex shuts down, your brain's reward system, especially the dopaminergic, I always say that word wrong, the dopamine pathways kick in. So listen to this. So when you react in a way that brings kind of quick relief, so if you yell or withdraw or people please or whatever, dopamine reinforces that behavior. Dopamine, yeah, same thing that's involved in eating Oreo cookies and having sex and spending money and, right, I know, and doing drugs. So over time, the combination of the threat anticipation, so the cortisol release, and the reward relief, the dopamine, over time that wires that emotional pattern even deeper into your brain. I know, right? I say all this because I want you to really understand, number one, how hard, that I don't want you to blame yourself for the trouble you have. And two, how hard it is to change. It doesn't mean it's impossible, but it means you can't listen to a 30-second TikTok video. If I told you how many little videos I put on TikTok and underneath someone's like, yeah, but tell me more, how do I do this? I'm like, listen to my podcast episode on this. You know, you need more than a minute video to really create change in your life. So if you've been using social media as a means to, you know, feel better, it's not. You've got to spend, if you're here with me, it means you're smart. I say this all the time. I never dumb down my information. It means you want to really learn and you're willing to take the time. So, and that's really important. If anyone who sits below my video and is like, shut up, get to the point already, or any of that stuff, it's like, oh, you don't even know. You've got to just take a breath, listen, spend some time. I hope you do the homework. I always have good homework, you know, to help you integrate the learning. Just calm down and spend a minute. If you're feeling urgency, even right now as I'm talking, take a minute, take a breath. So that three-step process I just said is why you keep repeating those same emotional patterns, that same emotional dance. You're not deciding in moments, you're replaying. Okay. And that's what you have to really understand. So there's a bunch of reasons why you're this way. That's the next question everyone always asks. Well, how come, Abby? Why am I this way? I would say attachment is the big reason. You know, our first emotional patterns form through attachment. You know, that's the bond we build with caregivers. I have a bunch of episodes that I will link about attachment style and all that. But basically, it's the really the earliest training ground for love, for conflict, for repair. It's how we learn all that. I've talked quite a bit about how attachment affects your adult relationships. I've even talked about how you perform at work, how it affects how you perform at work. And I've tended to stay more general in the past discussions, but I'm gonna again highly encourage you to go back and listen to those episodes or read the blogs or something. But so in the past, you know, can briefly do this, but I'm going to do a little different today. I'm going to give you some different information for those of you who are my big fans who listen all the time. I'm going to give you something new. In the past, I've talked about, of course, secure attachments. So there's secure attachment and insecure attachment. Okay. And the insecure attachment, there's three general categories. There's anxious, avoidant, and disorganized. Those are the three basic categories. Today, so again, go back and listen. I go deep on all those. Today, I wanted to give you a little more. So I'm going to go into some of the sub styles of insecure attachment. You've likely heard about them before. Just to give you, you know, a little more to go a little deeper, because who loves you? I do. That's right. So I want to mention there's anxious, preoccupied attachment. You know, again, within the insecure attachment styles, within anxious attachment, there's anxious preoccupied attachment, okay, like a little subfolder. And if you identify with this particular insecure attachment style, you learn that love was inconsistent. You learn, you know, sometimes it's warm, sometimes it's cold, and likely you now chase closeness because you're trying to quiet the fear of being left. And it can show up in a number of different ways in different types of relationships. So for example, in a romantic relationship, you might text repeatedly when your partner doesn't reply, then feel embarrassed or angry later. With your family, when your, you know, dad seems distracted, you might over-explain yourself, trying to earn kind of his attention and get him to understand. In a friendship, you might panic when a friend cancels plans, kind of assuming that you did something wrong as opposed to, you know, they just got busy or something. So your nervous system says, if I stay close enough, I won't be abandoned. That's what's happening there. All right. And then we also sometimes talk about, so there's, again, these insecure styles and there's anxious and avoidant. And so within avoidant, there's a sub type called dismissive avoidant attachment. And if you identify with this insecure attachment style, you learned that needing people was risky. So independence really became your armor. And in different relationships, again, that shows up differently. So actually, I'll do the same thing. So romantic relationships, it shows up like, you know, when your partner asks to talk about feelings, you suddenly need space. It's probably very unconscious that you do this stuff, but it happens. With your family, you change the subject when your sister brings up some kind of childhood conflict or pain. Okay. In a friendship, you probably keep relationships sort of surface level to avoid really what you see is the mess of intimacy, right? Your unconscious internal dialogue is, if I don't need anyone, I can't be hurt. That's what's going on underneath that. And then, and I'm not talking about work here, number one, because again, I did an entire episode on that on the Relationships Made Easy podcast, but also I want to remind everyone that I now have a separate podcast for work relationships and all things work called Workplace Therapy with Dr. Abby Metcalf. So I hope you listen to that. That's a shorter format. It's a little different format, very short. I get to the, you know, for those of you who want me to get to the point, you're going to like that one anyway. And then there's also another subcategory of, it's really more of the disorganized type, is fearful avoidant and fearful avoidant attachment. And if you identify with fearful avoidant insecure attachment style, you likely grew up in a home where love and fear were intertwined. So the person who soothed you probably also scared you. And let me give examples of that. So in romance, I would say you crave connection and then you push your partner away once they get close. You know, that distance or pursuer thing is probably big for you. With family, you probably call your mom for some comfort and then end up in a shouting match, right? And then you're like, why did I ever call that person? In friendship, I usually see is things like you would overshare one day and then go silent for weeks, you know, that kind of thing. So the internal story here, you know, the internal dialogue here is, I want closeness, but I can't trust closeness. If you're anything like me, you're bad at asking for help, like weirdly bad at it. I've been a busy gal for a long time now. Kids, partner, my own business, all the things that make for a full life these days. And my instinct always was to just white knuckle it and do it all myself. But I say it on this show all the time. Ask for help. You don't have to do it all. And meanwhile, there I was doing it all.
And I finally changed all that from my podcast editor to the person who got 10 years of photos off my phone and into albums I actually look at. I found amazing people to help me on Upwork, and I've been using them for the last 8 years. And you don't need a business for any of this, any project, any size, planning an event, sorting out something at home, finally handling the thing on your list you keep avoiding. Upwork lets you find, hire, and pay expert freelancers all in one place. With Business Plus, you can access the top 1% of talent on Upwork, and with AI-powered shortlisting, you'll get matched to the right freelancer in under 6 hours. No endless searching required. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help you and your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Now, if you're lucky, you're probably not listening if you grew up with the secure attachment style, but maybe you did. And maybe you grew up with emotional safety. You know, I hear it happens. Maybe your needs were mostly met. No one's needs are met perfectly, but maybe they were mostly met. And maybe when there was conflict, there was always repair afterwards, that kind of thing. So you might still get triggered though, remember, but you're going to recover faster. No matter how perfectly you grew up, you're probably, you know, everyone gets a little triggered now and then, but the difference is how triggered, how often, and how quick you recover. And those with a secure attachment style tend to, you know, really recover quickly, not have many, not be triggered too often, that kind of thing. Because you really assume goodwill instead of assuming catastrophe. You believe love can handle discomfort. You believe that. And again, you know, no one fits perfectly into one box. And I'm not saying all this so that you'll like just label yourself and be done. But I believe that knowing your sort of primary pattern gives you a map, not an excuse, but a map. And it gives you a direction for healing, which I really like. And I think most people do. So why is it so hard to change? Let me have a sip of water. Why is it so hard to change? Well, your nervous system doesn't care about happiness. It cares about predictability. I'm going to say that again. Your nervous system doesn't care about happiness. It cares about predictability. So even painful patterns feel safe because they're familiar. So let's say you grew up in a volatile home. And as an adult, when your partner yells, part of you feels alive, not because it's healthy, because it's known. And the silence after a calm discussion, that's what feels threatening to you. That's what feels crazy. And how many of you have told me, that's where the self-sabotage often comes in. Things are too good, right? That kind of thing. And this is what we psychologists call prediction error. Your brain expects conflict. So when peace comes, it feels unsafe. The unfamiliar triggers the same alarm bells as actual danger. And when you add your body's memory of emotion, you know, heart rate, muscle tension, adrenaline, all the hormones, neurotransmitters, I call this full body deja vu. That's what I call this. This is deja vu for your physical system, for your biology. Your system is unconsciously urging you to do what you've always done. And that's why you can read every self-help book and still snap at your sister. You're not, I want to be so clear, you're not failing. Your nervous system is just running an old safety script, for lack of a better term, right? And what happens is that breaking the patterns, it's going to feel wrong at first because calm feels foreign. The very thing you've been asking for, wanting, saying that's all you need, it feels weird. So the work is teaching your body that peace isn't punishment, that it's freedom. That's where the work is. Okay. And that would bring me, I'm realizing I'm going to do this in a little bit of a different order. So how do you rewire for good, for forever, you know, rewire for the long term? There's a neuroscience of change, and that's an important piece of this. And I know this can all, because I know this can all feel sort of hopeless sometimes. So it's really important to remember that your brain is plastic, not permanent. Your brain is plastic, not permanent. Neuroplasticity, that's what we're talking about, means your neural pathways change through repetition, through attention, through emotion. So when you interrupt an old reaction, even for 10 seconds, you start what we call pruning. The pruning happens, you sort of, it literally is like pruning a tree. You get rid of those connections. You start pruning the old connection and strengthening a new one, right? So those little dendrites get what we call bushy, and they, you know, as we create habits and things, they get really thick and they connect to other ones. And this is how all the messages get sent. And when you prune something back, you can kind of picture it in your brain, right? You end up with the sort of new growth, you know, the new shoots coming up, and things are not so easily transferred. Think of two trees next to each other. And let's say there was mites or something in one of the trees, right? If the leaves are all commingling between the two trees, and obviously those little, you know, or I don't know, mites, are there tree mites? Am I making this? You know how bad I am with nature, people. Like I'm a city girl, whatever, you know, whatever, like something that's, you know, hurting the tree, some disease of some kind, it's going to easily migrate between the two trees. But if you cut back all those leaves, so it was harder for whatever disease was on one tree to get to the other, right? That's what's happening in your brain. That's the pruning, when we prune back. And it's really, really important. So when you stop something, even for 10 seconds, you help that process. But that change requires repetition. You would not go in and cut one branch off a tree, right? You know, and expect everything to be better. You'd cut and cut and cut and cut. You know, you'd keep having to kind of go back. And, you know, I've talked about this research a million times from Philippa Lally, right? Research shows it takes an average of 66 days for a new behavior to feel automatic. So really an average of 66 days to change a habit. For a new behavior to feel automatic, that's how much you need on average. That's not moral strength. That's not what we're talking about. It's wiring time. It's time your brain needs to wire. So the best thing to do really is to start small. And years ago, I had behavioral scientist BJ Fogg here on the podcast. I will link to that episode that I did. I think he's still affiliated with Stanford. I don't even know, but he's been around a really long time. Boy, he knows. And through his research, he's found that micro habits, tiny achievable shifts, stick best, because when your brain experiences success, your dopamine fires and it reinforces the new loop. So you think of it as, he talks about it as emotional physical therapy, right? So, you know, the first few reps feel awkward, but over time, your new pattern becomes the path of least resistance. So he wrote a book called Tiny Habits, which again, I'll link to all these things in the show notes. On the blog. So for all of you who are new to the podcast, I write up a blog for every single episode. So if you have someone in your life who doesn't like to listen to podcasts and you want them to listen, to hear this information or to get this information, they can just go read the blog. Also, all the research I talk about, all the links I talk about, everything is there on my website, in the blog, all the links, all the research. You don't have to believe me. You can go to the research yourself. I've also tried really hard. Some people have complained over time that, you know, I pay for all these different journals and things so I can go read the research, you know, but I've tried to use the National Institute of Health and some other, I'm still reading maybe in a journal, but then I try to see if that same article, that same research study has been posted on the National Institute of Health. A lot of times it is. So I'm using those links in my blog. So you can really go read the whole thing. There's not going to be like a paywall there or a firewall there to get to the research. So yeah, I know. That's how much I think of you, that I go do these extra steps for you, because that's what we try to do. I want you educated. The more education you have, the more you're going to see how important this is, the more you're going to follow what I tell you to do. That's just that's how that all links together. But if you've been with me a while, you know you can trust me when I say the research says that it says, but it's up to you. So, okay, let's talk about the 5-step repatterning process. Because now that you know the science, right, we want to talk about how to fix it. Now that I've hopefully gotten you to a point where you realize how valuable it is to do what I'm telling you to do. That's always what I do. I try to kind of scare you a little and then give you the fix. So now I've introduced this before. This is a quick, I think really quick, very highly effective 5-step process. I'm going to do it again right now in more detail today. And again, I'm going to link to the different kinds of research about why it works on, you know, go to the blog, but because it's your answer to breaking these emotional patterns. Okay. And you can do just the first 3 of these steps. You can do all 5. And it's going to work. I have been using this now for a long time with my clients and with myself. And it's a game changer. So listen up. And my free download today has this all on a download. So I'll talk about that again at the end. So what you're going to do, 5-step process. Number one, you're going to name it. Awareness interrupts autopilot. When you name your emotion or emotions, you move from being in it to being with it, to being next to it. So and there's a, I keep talking about the research on self-distancing. It shows that using any sort of distance between yourself and the feeling, any third person language even. I actually like the third person language because it makes me laugh sometimes. You know, Abby's feeling anxious right now, right? Just to say that, like, oh, Abby's feeling anxious right now. It reduces emotional intensity, just saying it that way, and improves problem solving. But you can also just say, I'm feeling anxious right now. But it's, I always feel like Ricky Henderson, I don't know any baseball fans out there, but he's a Hall of Famer, amazing baseball player, played for the A's for many years. And I think he still has records for stolen bases and other things, but I apparently would get on base and go, Ricky's going to steal a base right now, or Ricky's going to whatever. He would talk about himself in the third person, which people loved. It's brilliant. It's like, but it really does work. Try it. Just, you might feel silly doing it, but try it. Just try it to yourself. You'll see, I'm telling you, you're going to immediately feel a shift in your anxiety or whatever feeling you're feeling. It's going to, again, reduce the emotional intensity, and because it helps you turn on, it's a trick that helps you, your prefrontal cortex regain control. So you're going to be able to problem solve. You're going to be able to think things through, right? So maybe in an argument with your partner, you might say, oh, I noticed my chest tightening. I'm feeling defensive, that kind of thing. With your mom, I'm noticing shame coming up when she criticizes me. With a friend, and you're just saying this to yourself. You're not saying it to them, right? You're noticing it in your own head. You're saying it to yourself. I'm feeling, with a friend, you might say something like, I'm feeling excluded. And maybe you even noticed that you're not feeling, that you're not actually excluded yet, but there's like a familiar feeling here, you know, something like that. Labeling turns that internal chaos into data. And that's why it matters. And again, the research backs me up 1,000%. So name it. Then step 2 is neutralize it. You can't think clearly while your nervous system is hijacked. Calming the body quickly is a step that often gets missed. That to me is one of the biggies. And then you fail at the change you're trying and you think there's something wrong with you and there's not. The vagus nerve, your body's main chill button, it responds to slow breathing, to humming, to physical grounding. So there's things you can try. Focus on your breathing. Okay. You know, you can do box breathing, inhale for 4, hold for 4, exhale 4, hold 4, you know, do that. Just the double inhale. Remember, I talk about all the time, incredibly effective. You inhale. And then at the very top, take another little sip of air. And then this long, slow exhale is the biggie through your mouth. That's the big game changer there. You could do self-contact, you know, hand on your heart, your hand on your face, on your cheeks, giving yourself a hug. All of these things work. You can do a sensory reset. You can run cool water over your hands. Put something cold on the back of your neck. Name 5 things you see. Name everything blue that you see in the room. Name a color and just pick it out. There's so much I've given you around this stuff, right? So maybe before you reply to your partner's angry text, do a double inhale, right? Just again, make sure that exhale is like twice as long as your inhale. That's really what you're going for. Okay. Teenager slams the door, you know, plant your feet and feel the floor instead of following them and screaming through the door, right? Neutralizing brings your prefrontal cortex back online so you can act instead of react. You can respond instead of react. And that is, I mean, that's what it's all about. So name it, neutralize it, and then you're gonna normalize it. Once you're calmer, you need to bring compassion online. And this is why I talk about Dr. Kristen Neff's research. In her research, she shows that self-compassion includes three things. It includes mindfulness, self-kindness, and common humanity. This is what we're going for here when we normalize it. Common humanity means remembering that, you know, struggle is universal. Everybody struggles. So saying to yourself, of course I reacted that way. This is an old strategy that it used to keep me safe. You know, I get it. Of course I feel jealous. I learned early that love could disappear. Anyone would feel overwhelmed being criticized by their parent. It makes sense that I reacted this way, given my history, given blah, 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 right? It's a reframe, right? It reframes shame into understanding. It activates your brain's caregiving system, which starts to release oxytocin and endorphins, all those wonderful, good, bonding, loving hormones, and which literally changes your biology and lowers your stress hormones. When you normalize your reaction, you create emotional safety inside yourself. And that's the foundation for change. So you got to do it. Okay. So you're naming it, you're neutralizing it, you're normalizing it. And then your step four is you're noticing the narrative. Every feeling rides a shotgun with a story. Oh, that was cute. Let's keep that. Somebody tweet that. Okay. How did I say that? Every feeling rides shotgun with a story. I like that. So this is where you re-examine it. And you want to ask, what's the story I'm telling myself about this? What evidence supports what I'm saying or challenges what I'm thinking? Is this story from now or from back in my childhood? So let's say your friend doesn't text back. You know, the story you say is, oh, she must be mad. The new reframe would be, you know, she's probably busy. This isn't about me. You know, not everything's about me. Your date cancels dinner. You know, the old story is I'm not a priority. The new thing might be, you know, they're exhausted. It's not rejection. I don't have to see it as rejection. They're exhausted. We psychologists call this cognitive reappraisal. And the research, there's a lot of research on cognitive reappraisal, and it shows that it reduces amygdala activation, the fear part of your brain, activating fear part of your brain, and increases your emotional control. Rewriting your story changes the feelings that follow. What do I always say? You feel the way you think, so you got to change it. And step five now is to navigate it. Because insight without action, you know, that's just rumination, really. You have to have action. Navigating means choosing a new value-based behavior. And remember, start tiny, right? Those micro habits we just talked about. Each new action builds a new neural path. So when your brother criticizes you, instead of defending, say, I hear you, and then change the subject. If your partner withdraws, instead of chasing, take a short walk, breathe, you know, do a double inhale before you reengage. If you feel ignored by a friend, you can send one honest text instead of five anxious ones, right? You're teaching your brain that connection and calm are compatible. All right. The truth, do I have truth? I think I have some truth. The truth is this, you don't erase old emotional patterns, you outgrow them. That's what happens. Although, you know, think of the trees, right? Every time you pause instead of react, you prove to your nervous system that safety can exist without control, without anger, without avoidance. And change feels uncomfortable. It's gonna, not because you're failing, but because you're succeeding. If you're uncomfortable, congratulations. The discomfort is your brain stretching towards something new, right? So name it, neutralize it, normalize it, notice the narrative, navigate it differently. This process, it's not just self-improvement. It's really self-liberation. And I want you to think of it that way. Okay. So my free download for today is I call it the emotional pattern interrupter. It's basically like a one-page, guide to rewire in real time, right? So I walk you through the 5-step process in under 2 minutes. So you can shift, from reaction to choice the moment you feel triggered. That's what we're hoping for, right? Okay. So, and you can get that if you're watching on YouTube, you can get that below the video. Please like and subscribe if you are watching on YouTube, and always leave a comment. I love, or hopefully a good one. I like hearing those. If you have a big complaint, frankly, I don't want to hear it. But if you have something constructive, I'd love to hear it. There's also a therapy to go bundle. So whenever you're listening to any of my podcasts and you think, oh my gosh, that is me. Abby's talking to me. This is a huge problem for me. I have a therapy to go bundle. I have more you could do besides the free download. You get the free download in the bundle. So you don't have to download two things if you want to do it. But the therapy to go bundle, if you want to pay for it, costs $10. If you want instead to join my Substack community, it's $8 a month. And you get this therapy to go bundle with every single podcast that comes out that month. Okay. I know. So I think it's a no-brainer, but it's up to you. Plus you get live Q&As with me, and you get, no ads in the podcast, and you get early drops, and you get the community. We have a beautiful community online where you can talk about things that are bothering you or what's going on, or it's kind of wonderful. We do wins on Wednesday. We call it Wednesday, like all kinds of stuff. I love that community. It's really fun. So the therapy to go bundle, if you're interested, contains the following. There's an emotional pattern tracker. There are journaling prompts to help you, again, go deeper on this and do kind of a little bit of therapy. There's a letter to my future calm self exercise. There's a pattern reframe worksheet. There are self-compassion scripts for when you're in those triggering moments. And there's two things I'm bringing back from episode 324, where I talked about emotional triggers. So there's an emotional regulation cheat sheet. There are trauma-informed breathing resources. All of that for $10. Or again, the $8 if you want to join the Substack community, which we would love to have you over there if that's of interest to you. And I think that's it for now. I hopefully you got a lot out of today. I always get a lot of learning in when I'm just doing these because, we say we teach what we need to learn. So I always feel like every time I'm teaching and helping you, I'm of course helping myself. I'm helping my clients. I'm getting clearer about things. I'm looking at the latest research. So it's really is a joy and just something I'm hugely grateful and appreciative of to do this podcast with you. It means the world. All right. I just love and adore you. If no one has told you that this week, be mindful this week, really be kind to yourself, and I'll see you soon. Thank you for spending time with me today. If you're loving what you're learning here, come join my One Love Collective. It's my private community where we take these conversations even deeper. You'll get a ton of bonus content, live Q&As with me, guided visualizations, journaling prompts, scripts, and an incredible community of like-minded people ready to support you as you create more ease and joy in all your relationships. It's all waiting for you at abbymetcalf.com or right on Substack. I'll see you next week.